Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Jim McPherson, and today I'll be reading from the September 10th, 2022 edition of The Economist, starting with a look at the cover. And we have a simple profile of an artist's rendition of Jair Bolsonaro, casting a shadow that looks very much like the profile of Donald Trump. The man who would be Trump is the caption for that, and we'll get to it, the lead story in the leader section, in just a few moments. But first, let's take a look at politics this week. Liz Truss won the leadership contest of Britain's Conservative Party, thus becoming Prime Minister. Ms. Truss appointed loyalists to the top jobs in her cabinet. Kwasi Kwarteng was appointed Chancellor of the Exchequer, James Cleverly, Foreign Secretary, and Suella Braverman, Home Secretary. There was no place at the table for Rishi Sunak, her opponent in the Tory race. Ms. Truss's most pressing task is helping Britons through the cost-of-living crisis. She unveiled plans to cap energy prices in order to protect households and firms from surging bills. Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission's president, proposed a set of measures to cushion the impact of rising energy prices on Europe's economy. They include mandatory consumption cuts, taxing the windfall profits of energy firms to provide rebates to consumers, and capping the price of Russian gas. European energy ministers will meet on September 9th to discuss the proposals. Russia has slashed gas deliveries to Europe to exert pressure on it to stop supporting Ukraine. The International Atomic Energy Agency published its assessment of the situation at the Zaporizhia nuclear plant in Ukraine following a visit by its inspectors. The report said that continued shelling in the area was causing damage, including to the building that houses fresh nuclear fuel. The IAEA suggests it is urgent to establish a protection zone around the facility. Vladimir Putin approved a foreign policy doctrine based on protecting the Russian world, which in essence means allowing the Kremlin to interfere in other countries with Russian-speaking populations. Meanwhile, a court in Moscow sentenced Ivan Safronov, a widely respected former journalist, to 22 years in prison after a closed-doors trial. Mr. Safronov was arrested in 2020 on charges of treason, which he denies. He had written about Russia's defense industry. Russia is reportedly buying millions of rockets from North Korea to deploy in Ukraine. A Pentagon official said turning to North Korea for weapons was a sign that Russians were facing challenges on the sustainment front. Kenya's Supreme Court dismissed an appeal by Raila Odinga against his narrow loss in a recent presidential election to William Ruto. Mr. Ruto will be sworn into office on September 13th. The ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, better known as the MPLA, was officially deemed to have won an election on August 24th, defeating the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, UNITA, by 51% to 44%, the closest result since the MPLA came to power in 1975. Angola's president, João Lourenço, will remain in office, but civil society groups said the true result was a tie or a narrow victory for UNITA. Jihadists were suspected of planting a bomb that killed at least 35 civilians traveling on a road in northern Burkina Faso. The country's military ruler had recently met his counterparts from Mali and Ivory Coast to discuss ways of tackling the jihadist threat in the region. Israel's army admitted that there was a high probability that one of its soldiers had killed a prominent Palestinian journalist, Shireen Abdu Akla, in May by mistake. It said the soldier had not identified her as a journalist. Almost 62% of voters in Chile rejected a new constitution. The referendum came after a year's deliberation by a constitutional convention that was plagued by scandal and heavily influenced by the hard left. At 388 articles, the proposed charter would have been one of the world's longest. Gabriel Boric, the new left-wing president, had backed the process. His disapproval rating has risen from 20% to 56%. Brazil's right-wing populist president, Jair Bolsonaro, whipped up big crowds at Independence Day parties in Brasilia and Rio de Janeiro. He said that an election on October 2nd would be a struggle of good versus evil, and that polls showing that Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, a former left-wing president, is ahead in the race were lying. 10 people were fatally stabbed in Saskatchewan, a rural province of Canada. It was one of the country's deadliest mass killings. One of the two suspects was later found dead with knife wounds. The other died after being captured by police, reportedly from self-inflicted injuries. A judge agreed that an independent lawyer or special master should be appointed to review the papers that were taken from Donald Trump's Florida home by the FBI. The decision will delay the Justice Department's evaluation of the classified files that Mr. Trump removed from the White House. Documents on the nuclear capabilities of an unnamed country were reportedly among the stash of papers confiscated by the FBI. NASA's Artemis unmanned mission to the moon may not be launched now until mid-October, after a second attempt was called off, this time because of a fuel leak. Californians were told to conserve power in order to avoid blackouts as the state sweltered under record-breaking temperatures. Some cities reached in the mid-40 degrees Celsius range, about 110 degrees Fahrenheit. A bomber attacked the Russian embassy in Kabul, killing 6 people, including 2 members of the diplomatic mission. Russia is one of the few countries to keep a diplomatic presence in Afghanistan after the Taliban's return to power. Scores of bombs this year have killed hundreds of people. Faced with a labor shortage, Australia raised the annual cap on permanent immigration to the country by a fifth to 195,000 people. It was the first increase in a decade. The government of Kiribati suspended 3 appeals court judges. The 3 had ruled against a decision to deport a high court judge who is also the husband of the opposition leader. The country of 32 Pacific atolls now has no judges in the high court or appeals court. Observers worry that Kiribati could slide into authoritarianism just as China gains influence. And China extended a lockdown in Chengdu, home to 21 million people. It is the biggest city to close since Shanghai locked down earlier this year. Dozens of Chinese cities have imposed restrictions to stem outbreaks. New cases have topped 1,000 per day for the past month. A 6.8 magnitude earthquake felt in Chengdu added to the suffering, killing scores of people. Remaining in the September 10, 2022 edition of The Economist, let us move on now to business this week. Volkswagen said that it would list Porsche in an IPO on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange that will take place in either late September or early October. The German carmaker is offloading only a portion of the stock, some of which will go to the Porsche Peak families, VW's biggest shareholders. The rest will be sold to individual investors. VW will retain the remaining shares. The flotation could raise as much as 10.6 billion euros, approximately $10.5 billion, which would make it the biggest stock market listing in Europe since Glencore in 2011. The European Central Bank lifted its benchmark interest rate by 0.75 percentage point, the biggest increase to date, to 0.75%. In July, the rate was raised from a negative rate of minus 0.5% to zero, which was the first increase in a decade. As with other central banks around the world, the ECB is under intense pressure to tame inflation, which stood at an annual rate of 9.1% in the eurozone in August. The day before the ECB's decision, Canada's central bank lifted its main interest rate, and also by the same amount, taking it to 3.25%, the first time it has been over 3% since 2008. OPEC Plus decided to cut output by 100,000 barrels of oil a day, a slap in the face for Western governments that have urged the cartel to increase production in order to keep prices down. The cut is small. Global demand is about 100 million barrels a day, taking output back to where it was in August, and reverses a small increase in production that was agreed to after Joe Biden visited Saudi Arabia to plead for more oil on the market. Amid talk of a recession in the West, the price of oil has in fact dropped from almost $125 in early June for a barrel of Brent crude to under $90 this week for the first time since February. OPEC is signaling that it does not want the price to fall much further. South Africa's economy shrank by 0.7% in the second quarter over the previous quarter, when the country had to contend with flooding that disrupted production at car factories and washed away infrastructure and power cuts. Unions have been calling for a general strike to protest against high living costs, poverty, and unemployment. Fresh COVID lockdowns in China's cities last month lay behind a drastic slowdown in the country's exports, which rose by 7.1% year-on-year compared to 18% in July. China's central bank moved to shore up the limp yuan by reducing the amount of foreign currency that banks need to hold. Meanwhile, the yen fell to yen 144 against the dollar, its weakest level since 1998. Officials hinted that they were ready to intervene to head off a further decline. The euro sank to a new 20-year low amid the turmoil in European energy, and the pound plunged to $1.14, its lowest level since 1985, amid dire forecasts about the British economy. The Biden administration gave more details about its plans for subsidizing the production of semiconductors in America. Around $28 billion will be provided for cutting-edge logic and memory chips, $10 billion for current generation chips, and $11 billion for a new technology center and other institutes. The government wants to boost domestic expertise in semiconductors and reduce the reliance on chips from South Korea and Taiwan. In a deal that further diversifies its healthcare business, CVS Health agreed to buy Signify Health, which provides virtual and at-home help to patients, for $8 billion. Amazon was one of several companies said to have bid for Signify. CVS was known mostly for its retail pharmacy chain until 2007, when it expanded into the administration of prescription drug programs and then, in 2018, health insurance. Juul reached a settlement with 33 American states to resolve claims that it targeted its vaping products at underage users. Under the agreement, it will pay out $438.5 million. And will be banned from portraying users under the age of 35 in its marketing materials. The company, which denies wrongdoing, is appealing against a ruling from the Food and Drug Administration that would stop it from selling its e-cigarettes merchandise in the United States. Apple launched the iPhone 14 at its annual product event. Like previous models, the latest iPhone includes pricier Pro versions, which have helped increase revenue for Apple. Smartphone sales have declined considerably this year, but the one bright spot, according to Counterpoint Research, is the market for phones priced above $900. The judge overseeing the forthcoming trial between Elon Musk and Twitter ruled that evidence will be allowed from a whistleblower that Mr. Musk says backs his claim that Twitter misled him about fake user accounts, the reason why he wants to back out of his $44 billion takeover. The text was revealed at the hearing in which Mr. Musk said he wanted to slow down the deal just 2 weeks after it was announced, in case World War III breaks out in Ukraine. And the chairman of Lukoil reportedly died after falling out of a hospital window in Moscow. The Russian oil giant said that he had passed away following a severe illness. A number of senior Russian businessmen, mostly connected to energy, have died in mysterious circumstances this year. In May, Russian media reported the death of another senior executive at Lukoil, who was found in a room used for voodoo rituals at the house of a shaman. Reports at the time said that he had been given venomous toad poison to cure a hangover. On now to the lead article in the Leaders section that inspired the cover for the September 10, 2022 edition of The Economist. Win or lose, Jair Bolsonaro poses a threat to Brazilian democracy. All the signs are that he will lose an election and say he won it. Joe Biden was talking about the United States when he warned on September 1st that, quote, democracy cannot survive when one side believes there are only two outcomes to an election, either they win or they were cheated, unquote. He might as well have been talking about Brazil. Next month, its president, Jair Bolsonaro, faces an election that every poll says he will probably lose. He says he will accept the result if it is clean and transparent, which it will be. Brazil's electronic voting system is well run and hard to tamper with. But here's the catch. Mr. Bolsonaro keeps saying the polls are wrong and he's on a course to win. He keeps insinuating, too, that the election could somehow be rigged against him. He offers no credible evidence, but many of his supporters believe him. He seems to be laying the rhetorical groundwork to cry ballot fraud and deny the voters' verdict. Brazilians fear he could then incite an insurrection, perhaps like the one America suffered when a mob of Donald Trump's supporters invaded the Capitol on January 6, 2021, or perhaps even worse. One reason for worrying that Mr. Bolsonaro might borrow a page from Mr. Trump's unprincipled playbook is that he has often done so before. He sows division. The other side are not merely wrong, but evil. He dismisses criticism as fake news. His instincts are as authoritarian as Mr. Trump's. He waxes nostalgic about the days of military rule in Brazil. One of his sons, who is also one of his closest advisors, openly applauded the Capitol rioters. Mr. Bolsonaro was one of the last world leaders to accept that Mr. Biden had won. Mr. Bolsonaro, previously a foul-mouthed congressional gadfly, was elected president in 2018 on a wave of anti-establishment fury. To pull off this unlikely feat, he had learned tricks from another foul-mouthed, widely underestimated outsider. The most important of these was the skillful and mendacious misuse of social media. He remains Brazil's uncontested master of this, and has thus convinced his supporters of two things. First, that if he loses, it is evidence that the vote was unfair. Second, that a win for his main opponent, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, would hand Brazil to the devil. In the parallel reality that Mr. Bolsonaro has constructed, a President Lula would shut down Brazilian churches, turn the country into a narco state, and encourage boys to wear dresses. This is nonsense. Lula is a pragmatic leftist who was fairly successful as president between 2003 and 2010. Buoyed by a commodities boom, he presided over rising incomes and a big expansion of the welfare state. The boom collapsed after he left office, and his successor and protege, Dilma Rousseff, was impeached amid a vast corruption scandal dating back years. Lula himself was found guilty of taking bribes, though his convictions were later thrown out and he denies wrongdoing. In short, he is far from the ideal candidate, but he is squarely within the realm of the normal, and he is a supporter of democracy. Mr. Bolsonaro, by instinct, is not. He may operate within a democratic system, but he is constantly looking for ways to evade its strictures. And the worry is that the system constraining him is less robust than the one that constrained Mr. Trump. It is inconceivable that the American military would abet a coup, but Brazil's last military regime only ended in 1985. The army is deeply entrenched in government and has asked questions about the voting system. The country is buzzing with talk of a possible putsch. It probably won't happen, but some kind of insurrection might. Mr. Bolsonaro routinely incites violence. It is hard to know how else to interpret phrases like, quote, "Let's machine gun Workers' Party supporters," unquote. More than 45 politicians were murdered in the first 6 months of 2022. Mr. Bolsonaro's followers are better armed than ever before. Since he took office and widened loopholes in gun controls, the number of guns in private hands has doubled to 2 million. If Brazil's electoral tribunal announces that Lula has won, armed Bolsonaristas might attack the tribunal. The question then is which side military police forces, nearly 400,000 strong in all, who are supposed to keep order, would take. They are trigger-happy and fond of Mr. Bolsonaro, who has proposed a shield law for officers who kill suspects. Some might prove more loyal to him than to the Brazilian Constitution. If there is chaos in the streets, Mr. Bolsonaro might invoke emergency powers to postpone the handover of power. He thus poses as great a threat to Latin America's largest democracy as he does to the world's largest rainforest. On his watch, the slashing and burning of the Amazon has proceeded 70% faster than before, because he does almost nothing to stop it. And whatever happens, he and his movement are not going away. He has learned from Mr. Trump how to snatch influence and power from the jaws of defeat. When normal candidates lose elections, their parties tend to dump them for someone fresh. When Mr. Trump lost, by contrast, he told his core supporters that they had been robbed and turned his big lie into a rallying cry. It unites his movement and gives him a chokehold over the Republican Party. Hardly anyone who denies it can win a Republican primary. The same big lie could make Mr. Bolsonaro the most influential opposition politician in Brazil. His base, evangelical Christians, gun owners, and rural folk who feel overregulated and vulnerable to land invasions, may stick with him, convinced that he is Brazil's rightful president. His supporters in the legislature and in the states may hobble Lula's ability to govern. Brazil may grow ever more divided. The best outcome would be for Mr. Bolsonaro to lose by such a wide margin that he cannot plausibly claim to have won, either in the first round on October 2nd or, more likely, in a runoff on October 30th. It will be a tense, dangerous few weeks. Other countries should publicly support Brazilian democracy and quietly make clear to the Brazilian military that anything resembling a coup would make Brazil a pariah. Brazilian voters should resist the pull of a shameless populist. They and their country deserve better. And now for an article that dwells on U.S. news in the September 10, 2022 edition of The Economist. The dollar is as strong as ever, isn't it? Technology is undermining the clout of the global reserve currency. The most important currency in the world is on a roll. The dollar has climbed by around 20% over the past year against a basket of global currencies and is at its highest level in 20 years. 1 euro is worth less than a dollar, and other pretenders to the dollar's throne as the world's reserve currency, such as the yen, won, or even crypto, have slumped. Even as America has used its financial clout to squeeze Russia, others have rushed to the dollar-based financial system as a safe haven. This cyclical strength of the dollar dominates the global financial landscape. But look closer, and the technological shifts that could eventually challenge it are gathering momentum. The dollar's run reflects several forces. Even as Europe and China face a downturn, America's economy is proving remarkably resilient, with job growth and profits still strong. Inflation is high, and the Federal Reserve is raising rates faster and higher than other big central banks. Energy crises are terms of trade shocks that favor energy exporters and punish the currencies of importers. Thanks to the shale revolution, America became a net energy exporter in 2019 for the first time since 1952. None of these dynamics looks likely to abate soon. For America, a strong dollar has some advantages. It will help bring down inflation, even if it might pose some longer-term competitiveness problems. For much of the world, though, it is bad news. The greenback remains preeminent in trade invoicing and cross-border debt. As a result, as the Fed raises rates and capital shifts to America, the finances of emerging markets get squeezed. So far, big economies such as India have held up well, but smaller places with heavy debts, such as Sri Lanka and Pakistan, are in big trouble. The endurance of this global dollar-based system, in spite of the resentments it arouses, is testament to America's staying power. It has been through difficult times in the past 15 years with a financial crisis, a badly handled pandemic, a widening fiscal deficit, and a constitutional crisis in 2021. Nonetheless, even as the greenback soars, two technological developments bear close attention. First, new state-run digital currency and payment systems are, at last, gaining traction. China's Yuan now has 260 million users, and the technology involved might eventually allow China to run its own global payments network while maintaining capital controls, which it regards as necessary to maintain stability. That could make it all but immune to American sanctions. Elsewhere, state payments systems are exhibiting powerful network effects. India's UPI system is vast, and Brazil's payment system, PIX, has been used by 126 million people. Today, these payments networks are domestic. Tomorrow, they could facilitate cross-border transactions as alternatives to the dollar-based system. Second, if you look beyond the scams and bubbles in cryptocurrencies, decentralized finance technologies continue to improve. Developers are pushing through an upgrade to the Ethereum blockchain, on which most DeFi applications are based. On September 15th, it will switch to a new mechanism for making collective decisions known as proof of stake that is far less energy intensive. The drop in power consumption will be equivalent to Chile being switched off. It could pave the way for Ethereum to become more efficient at handling high transaction volumes and a more credible global rival to traditional finance. In the 20th century, the dollar eclipsed sterling as the world's reserve currency to become widely used as a unit of account, store of value, and means of payment. The next change in currency regimes may not be so clear-cut, as new technologies make it possible to separate out some reserve currency functions, allowing countries to establish autonomy in payments, for example, without contesting the dollar's role in other areas. The dollar's reserve currency status is not changing yet, but technology will change what it means to be a reserve currency. And that's all the time we have for this edition of In the News with Chris this week. I'm Jim McPherson, and I've been reading from the September 10th, 2022 edition of The Economist. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.